Garden State Debate, where the talk is real. Garden State Debate, no joke, no frills. Garden State Debate, it's the talk of the town. Garden State Debate, for people all around, yeah. Garden State Debate, Garden State Debate, Garden State Debate.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ryan, and welcome to Garden State Debate. As you can see, I'm not at my usual spot downstairs at my house. I'm actually live on site here. We have a very special guest with us, Will Dodge, who is the owner and founder of Bull and Bear Brewery here in Summit, New Jersey. And we're very excited to talk to Will about a number of things, such as opening up a small business in general, obviously, specifically, the regulations and the regulatory and municipality things that go into opening up a brewery and state regulations and things like that as well. And then we also are going to dive into kind of what brought Will to wanting to brew beer and do it for a living. And all the excitement that comes along with that. And then obviously, everyone wants to know the, you know, what's it been like through the pandemic. But some very exciting news. I think at the end of this show, Will has a very exciting announcement about the official grand opening date for Bull and Bear Brewery here in Summit, New Jersey. So I'll leave that to him. But before we get there, let's get started. Will, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. It's really exciting. It's been a really exciting experience to go through this. It's been a very long process for anyone who's been following knows, but I'm so glad to be finally in the home stretch here and be sharing my life's passion with everyone here in Summit, New Jersey, and hopefully the surrounding areas.
Yeah, no, that's great. We really appreciate it. Thank you again. I already pointed it out, but I'm on one side. I actually came down to the brewery here. I'm on one side. Will's all the way back over there by the front door, which is open. As you can see, we're masked up. The back door is open. There's a beautiful patio out here. We'll get into some of the capacity stuff in a little bit. But Will, first question I have for you is, what brought you to wanting to, I mean, a lot of people, you know, myself included, are fans of beer in general, and it's a social aspect that many people like. So what brought you to wanting to do it, you know, professionally, and even beyond that, got you to actually taking the next step and the critical step into opening your own brewery?
You know, I've had a long passion for beer as well, especially craft beer, as far back as legally I can say. I did it quite a few summers in Canada, so I can say that even before probably most people in the United States could be enjoying craft beer, I was enjoying craft beer where it was legal in a foreign country. So even as a young man, I was very passionate and interested in very good beer, and that was a big hurdle. I went to the University of Maine for 2 years, where that basically everyone was drinking craft beer very early on in the late 90s and early 2000s. So I was kind of lucky in that regard, that in craft beer in general, I immediately took to it, where a lot of older generations, you know, it was something new that had to be introduced to them. So that being said, I was very quickly on the craft beer train and started pursuing more and more obscure flavors and recipes and beer styles, which at the time in the early 2000s was not very easy to come by, even in at the very, very good liquor stores with the best beer selections, and they were very seasonal at best. And so I quickly learned that if I wanted to have the beer that I wanted when I wanted it, and not pay an absolute fortune for it, I was going to have to make it myself. And that's what kind of started me down the path of homebrewing, which I got serious about in about 2011. And I've been homebrewing ever since, which has been an amazing teaching experience. And the first time, as any homebrewer will tell you, the first time that they make a batch of beer, which is actually pretty good, the first thing they think comes to their mind is, I could do this for a living. This is a lot of fun. And I was one of those people, and I kind of always kept that in the back of my mind. And then, you know, 7, 8, 9 years later, depending on when where you count, I actually made it happen. So
that's great. So you followed your, so you had this kind of in the back of your brain for 10 plus years, but were you always, you know, you said you went to college for a couple of years in Maine, and obviously enjoyed kind of being around and the beer scene for a while, but as a profession, were you always in the beer industry or before Bull and Bear here in Summit, or what were you doing before this?
So I was not always into beer. That was always a hobby. I had many different professions throughout the years, but for the last, say, 7 to 9 years, I was in the finance industry. I worked for Prudential. I did internal wholesaling on their desk there in Newark. And I did that for 3 years. I was with Putnam Investments. I was with Merrill Lynch. I was with, you know, half a dozen other financial organizations as mergers and layoffs and whatever we'll have you do. And while I was at Prudential, is when I finally decided to pull the trigger and actually start the process of building the brewery. It was actually one of my colleagues who I brewed beer with occasionally on the side for fun, who I was talking with, and I'm like, you know, this is, I've seen the demand in this part of New Jersey, and I'm like, there's so much room for more breweries. Like, what does it take? Like, maybe I should do this. You know, I had a unique situation where I did have an opportunity to make this kind of investment, and I kind of felt like I knew what I was doing and enough to maybe start the company and then find the real talent to help create something that would be very desirable for people to want to come to. And then I started kind of thinking what it would look like and what size system I was going to have, and instead of crunching numbers over and over and over again, running Excel spreadsheets and running different scenarios, always looking over my shoulder to my colleague and saying, like, this one would work. If it went like this, it would work. And I can still hear his voice saying, like, you can do it, Dodge. Just do it. You can do it, Dodge. You got this. You can do it. And he was the first person to really belief in this project. He believed in it before even I did. So it was pretty amazing to have that kind of support in the very, very early stages when it was just, you know, a dream in my mind.
That's great. Now it's good to have that support, and it sounded like you're eyeballing it for a while. And it's very interesting that you went from the what sounds like a 9-to-5 and you took the suit off. And like I said, and went for kind of what sounds like your passion, and a lot of other people's kind of, you know, dream job or something that they think that they would, you know, aspire to do, but never really get around to doing it. So you went from that standpoint then with your buddy, colleague, kind of pushing you and yourself wanting to do it. And then what, how'd you rip off the Band-Aid? What was the first thing that went from kind of eyeballing and knowing that you can do it to actually putting your one foot into the hole?
So I would say at first I was like, you know, this was going to be a side project, as how it first started out in my mind. Like, oh, you know, I'm still going to stay in the industry, and maybe I'll just build something really small off to the side. And even if it just is flat, even if I can eventually get my money back over the few years, it'll just be a way for me to kind of let out my creative side a little bit and be able to create something and be able to create beer and try to share my my beer experience with other people. And so I found a brand, built a name around it, Bull and Bear Brewery, based off of the financial markets, because I was still really into finance at the time, and all my friends were. And I thought it would be a fun kind of thing to do, and it's an easy way to name beers, because it's the finance industry has its own language, so you can just pick any name that you want, and probably no other breweries use that. Because I think there's only like one other really finance themed brewery in the country, as opposed to like right. 9,000. There's 9,000 breweries in the United States, and so to only have one other one that's kind of finance themed in Chicago, it makes it a lot easier to pick names, because you're like, all right, let's see what the Chicago guys are doing. All right, they don't have that. Okay, I can use that. So that made it really. I thought that was a nice kind of niche thing. And this particular area of New Jersey has a lot of people that commute into the city for finance. So I picked the name. It was available for the for a website. It was available on many other ways that you have to legally create your business. It was available as an LLC, all the social media platforms. There was a version of it available. And I said, all right, I'll just, spend the money on the URL. I'll spend the money in forming the LLC, and then I'll just have this. And when I want to use it, then I'll use it. And meanwhile, I was still having that very deep conversation with my wife over whether or not this is a good idea, which she was not as excited about this idea as she is now, to say it lightly. But as I showed her the numbers more and more people heard about the idea and said, this is going to be amazing. It's going to be great. She got on board, and then my parents got on board, and then her parents got on board. And then eventually everyone was like, okay, this is going to be a good idea. You should do it.
That's great. Go ahead.
Well, with that support, I was able to really start financially, investing in it and not get a lot of "you're crazy, what are you doing to us" sort of stuff.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think that would be the first reaction that I would get to, or many of us going home with that idea. So I didn't want to pry into your personal situation, but I was wondering, from a family dynamic standpoint, I think you started this process, you were telling me, what was it, formally kind of in 2018? It's been a couple of years, right?
Yeah, I started thinking about it seriously and running the models in late 2017. In 2018, I officially, it was early 2018, it was like February, I got the, formed the LLC, got the website, and all the social media platforms, and started poking around. I started going around and started looking for equipment, and I started meeting with real estate agents and started kind of just poking around and looking for spaces. And then at that point, I had, I'd spent a couple hundred bucks on, the URL and a couple other things and a couple filing fees for the LLC. So it was, just a little bit of time here and there that I'd have to go, and it wasn't too much off my back. And then, you just start getting deeper and deeper, and then at some point you're looking at it going, okay, I have to write a check for the deposit on equipment, and there's no turning back after this. And that was a big day for certain. And that happened in probably mid to late 2018. I realized that like there's no turning back now.
Went before location, or were they kind of simultaneous in terms of, was there a story? Were you looking at different areas? I'm assuming you're from the area here, and one of the neighboring towns, or
Yeah.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that, the location search and things that went into kind of getting everything set up.
Yeah, so my wife and I live in, and my kids, we live in Chatham, New Jersey, and which is right next here to Summit. And we always came into Summit for dinners when we do dinners out and such. And we love BYO restaurants because we're not huge. I'm not, as you may have noticed, I'm not a huge wine person. But my wife likes to drink a little bit of wine at dinner. And so we don't want to spend a fortune on wine. So we're like, oh, it's great. We can, you know, just bring a bottle of wine that doesn't cost a ton of money. And, you know, we can just go into a BYO. And I was looking in Summit, and I was like, there's so many like BYO restaurants. Like, why is that? Why is there so many? And I started learning more about, you know, the liquor laws in the state of New Jersey, which is pretty common in most states, but it was very restrictive when it comes to population. And so there's such a high demand for spaces that would serve alcohol in Summit and surrounding towns here in New Jersey, but they just didn't have the populations to support those extra liquor licenses. And I just saw that huge opportunity. It's like, you should just build a brewery. You don't need a liquor license for a brewery. It's a brewer's permit. It's a different thing. It's not based off of population. And right around that same time, like one or two breweries in this area started opening. And just when I was thinking about this, and that was probably slightly before 2018. It was probably like 2016, 2017. And I was like, wow, look at the demand. I was so surprised. I wasn't surprised. I was vindicated with my, I was like, yeah, I was right. That's, there should be a brewery that opens here and there should be a brewery that opened there. I called that town. I knew that was going to happen. And it happened two or three times. It was like, oh, you know where the next brewery should be in this town. And then like, you know, inevitably like 2 months later, a brewery would announce they were opening there. And I'm like, all right, I'm picking the towns and I'm picking the order that they're announcing in. Like, I need to get on this bandwagon. I'm picking my town and I'm going to go. And I jumped in. Now, interesting enough, I picked Summit, but I almost ended up in Cranford. I was very close to Cranford. I was very close to another spot in Westfield. Very close in Westfield. I think even thinking back now, I think I even put a bid in on a spot at one point. I ended up here in Summit, which is where I originally was hoping to go. It was very close to where we live. I knew the town very well, and I'm very happy with my spot. And because I wanted something that was a downtown space, which to try to make my brewery a little bit more unique. Most breweries are more destination in this state. There's only a handful that are really have that kind of foot traffic-y, boutique-y type feel. And I wanted something a little bit more tight and intimate that's right in the town that can help draw people into the town itself for retail purposes as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. Especially compared to a couple of the local ones that I've been to, that like you've mentioned, you know, we're right here on Springfield Ave and Summit, for those that don't know, just a block or two away from the train station, which is a major hub on New Jersey Transit, and really in the center of all the dining and restaurant boutiques. You have the big parking lots out back here. Where we have our farmers market and a lot of other things here in Summit. So it really is a great deal. Did you have any challenges, Will, when you went to, you know, through the various hurdles in setting the place up, in terms of government, whether it be at the municipal level, state level, in terms of permits or zoning, things like that, or did that run rather smooth? Or how would you summarize that?
I would say that surprisingly, the federal level, because I have to get at least two different permits for alcohol production, one at the federal level and one at the state level. And then there's some zoning stuff, usually at the municipality level. The federal level was surprisingly not that was a lot of work. And I have to say, I don't know, because I paid a lawyer to do most of that work. And that it certainly was a decent sized check. So I saw the paperwork that they did. So I knew it was a lot, and a lot of background checks. So, you know, the amount of background checks I went through with them, it was those forms. It was like, do you want to sell guns or do you want to make beer? And I'm like, check the box, says make beer. So, you know, yeah, I had the option at one point to change the plan and make, and maybe get into the arms dealing, but I decided to go with beer instead. But so
good choice.
Yeah, I thought so too. But the federal level was not too laborious. It was expensive and took time, a couple months. But that wasn't the big hurdle. The big hurdle was going to be the state. And that's mostly because the federal level, they push a lot of this stuff down to the state level. So, and the state of New Jersey was actually, I've heard in the past, has been very, very, very difficult. This was back, started this process back in like mid to late 2018. And I started the process there. This is where it kind of starts getting a little complicated and multifaceted. The big problem with applying for at the state level is that you need a specific address. So, which means I needed to have a lease signed. And so if it took 9 months for them to come through and finally give me the brewer's permit, I would have to pay 9 months worth of rent waiting for them to finish processing my paperwork, and that can put a lot of people out of business, that you can't even start doing things until 9 months have passed and you're paying rent on them. So luckily I found a space down here in downtown Summit that I could sign a lease for, but it wasn't ready yet because the building was old and dilapidated and the landlord needed to do work to it. So I could sign the lease, but the landlord couldn't rent, couldn't charge rent and start making the space available to me until he had fixed up the space. And so I was able to get a signed lease with an address and start the clock with the state, but not have to pay rent, which I thought, oh, I'm so smart. Look what I just did. Of course, when you take over a new old building, it ends up being kind of a money pit, and I probably paid for it in other ways in the end anyway. But it was that was the plan at the start, and it sort of worked out. But some other factors came in that ended up delaying me further, and the state couldn't finally give me the final go-ahead to start producing beer until a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. So as of right now, you're going to be sharing the grand opening date in a little bit, but as of right now, you can legally sell beer in here at the brewery.
Yes, that's right? Correct. Yeah. I'm legally able to sell beer in the space. I can distribute to restaurants and bars. Pick up to go. During COVID, I'm actually allowed to deliver as well, which will be a service we'll eventually provide. I need to work out those logistics. That's another hurdle and another form and stickers on the cars and all this other stuff. But
I wanted to ask you. Yeah, I just kind of want to. You kind of touched on it right there, but your distribution channels. Kind of jumping a little bit ahead because I want to talk about COVID a little bit, but. Your distribution channels right now in the middle of the pandemic here, obviously it's a moving target based on executive orders and things like that. Right now there's a 25% capacity, probably that you fall under. And there's also different dining restrictions and alcohol restrictions, stuff like that. So what are you looking at? First of all, in terms of distribution, in terms of people inside or people maybe on the patio, and then are you going to be offering, you kind of touched on it, hooking up with some restaurants maybe here in Summit or in the area, mm-hmm. and then either canned beer or growlers to go, is that kind of Did I kind of hit on it, or am I missing anything, or is there any of those that aren't going to be happening off the bat?
I think those are all, but I think you covered it. I mean, inside the brewery right now, Governor Murphy has, you know, required that we have 25% occupancy for restaurants and bars. Breweries fall under that same executive order, so I can only have 25% occupancy in the brewery here with, say, two staff members. That only leaves about 10 people that can be in the brewery with those two staff members at a time. I do have a back patio out back, but depending on how people seat themselves and what their groups show up, it could be anywhere from another 10 to another 20 people that I could probably have either standing or sitting outside. Restrictions continue as far as it has to be table service. So originally I'd set up that people would come to the bar to get their drinks and then return to the table with no bar seating. But unfortunately, at this time, people cannot come to the bar to order their drinks. So we're going to have a staff member come to each individual table and take orders and bring the drinks to them. So that's a little bit of I might have to do some additional staffing. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work just yet. You know, the ground is constantly shifting underneath me. So by the time this is released, these things can change on me very quickly. So I have to be flexible with that. But that's basically where we are right now with that on premise. You are allowed to carry out. So growlers are going to be available for purchase. I think initially I'm not going to be refilling pre-owned growlers for sanitary purposes until I can make sure that I have a safe way to sanitize and refill growlers without potentially spreading the virus. And then eventually we'll be doing canning as well. I've worked out a deal with a local mobile canning unit, which will come right into here to the brewery and can the beer. And so we'll have a can release day, which is very popular within a beer community. And if it's hopefully as popular as I want it to be, you may see a line of people standing down Springfield Avenue waiting, because it's kind of a subculture thing to wait in line to get beer. Which is a pretty neat experience. I've done it once or twice. It's a lot of fun. Everyone gets really excited about it. And then, of course, the restaurants and bars. Yeah.
And do you have anything lined up with the restaurants and bars yet, or too early to? I mean, you don't have to say specifics, but anything past, just feeling each other out?
Yeah, I've got a very high interest in a handful of restaurants right here in Summit. Which is easier for me because I just put it on a cart and push it down the street and hand it to them. I don't even have to, you know, get a sticker for a car, which is great. But also I've had some expressed interest in Hoboken and a couple of the other surrounding towns. So I'm just going to be slowly starting to fill those orders because I just want to make sure that I don't overextend myself until I know exactly what the demand is going to be like in the brewery itself. It can be very difficult to manage. It can be very difficult to manage a inventory. Sorry, my neighbor at the door was trying to come in. Neighbors at the door. So So that's basically how it kind of works in regards to that. So it's a long process to kind of figure out how much demand you have and be able to allocate it to the right places. So we're kind of easing into that process, but you'll start seeing the Bull and Bear Brewery on tap on more and more places as we get a better feel.
That's awesome. That's great to hear that you already got a pipeline set up to roll out when you go live here in a couple of weeks. If you didn't mind, I was hoping that we could do a quick tour. I'm sure some of the people who are tuning into the show, you know, they're anxious to see what it looks like, to hear about it, to hear from you, and to hear all the fun things as well. It's obviously pretty exciting what's going on, and what you're going to be serving as well. So hopefully we can maybe even do a tasting or something if you have anything available.
I got some.
And you can talk to us. And you could talk to us a little bit about some of the beers you've been brewing.
Yeah, definitely.
So you want to do that now? We'll jump into the tour.
Yeah, we'll jump into the tour right away. I'll start with we'll start with water because that's where it all begins.
All right, we're back with Will. He's downstairs, actually. We were up here recording before. He's downstairs. There's a ton of brewing equipment downstairs. A lot of the process is down there. Will, about as far as the equipment you have, how much of it, 50% of it is down there or more? And can you, do you mind walking us through the different pieces of equipment and just briefly telling us what they do and kind of the brewing capacity that you have here?
Sure. Love to. So, so the first piece of equipment I'm going to show you, it's about 75% of the pieces of equipment, to answer your question, is downstairs, which is pretty pretty amazing. We are in a pretty small space down here in downtown Summit. But I was going to start you off here with our water filter. We use actually a reverse osmosis system here. So we strip down the water to pure H2O, which can get actually very acidic. So you have to be very careful what kind of vessels you put that in. And the reason for that is that way we can mimic any type of water that we want to throughout the world by adding the salts back in. So we can fit that profile for, say, somewhere in Bavaria or in Northern England or the Czech Republic. And those areas have very different types of water, and their beer styles were formed based off of the water that was available to them at the time. And so we strip down the water here, and then we actually pump it upstairs to where you are. So if you want to look over your left shoulder, up above the bathrooms there, we have two large water tanks up there, one cold and one hot, that we store the reverse osmosis RO water in, so we can call for it whenever we want. Both of those vessels empty are about 1,000 pounds with 500 gallons of water in about each of those. That's another 2,000 pounds per vessel. So that's 3,000 total. That's 6,000 pounds above the bathrooms. It's a pretty amazing.
Got strong ceilings above there.
Yeah, yeah. We reinforced it again and talked to four different engineers to make sure. And they are full, and I didn't hear one creak the first time that we filled those water tanks up. I was amazed at the great engineering that we got from our architects and from the many, many different engineers that they outsourced to as well to ensure that those things would not fall on me while I was in the bathroom. So we store water up there, and then we have a smaller system down here. So I'm going to turn the camera here a little bit so you guys can see the rest of the basement. And I think that will get
a little bit more. Yep, that's
good. There
you
go.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent.
First of all, it looks really big. I mean, you got a lot of tanks down there.
Yeah, yeah. So we have quite a few different tanks down here. I'm going to work closest to me here and work our way that way. Let's see if I can't see the first one here. There we go. So we have the first two here. We have the mash tun here. This is the smaller pilot system that we use. You'll see the same one upstairs over Ryan's right shoulder. Now he's in front of it, but yeah, it's back there. So we have a mash tun here. We start there. We bring in some hot water. We add our grains there, make a nice warm porridge, then strain out that sugary water, put it into the boil kettle, which is the next vessel here. We boil that for about an hour to an hour and a half, depending on the recipe, adding our hops in there as well. Then we cool it down with a heat exchanger, which is off camera at the moment, but we push cold water one way and the hot beer the other way. It's still just sugar at this point, but we cool it down, and then we move it into the fermenters, which we have further down here beyond this boxy-looking system. And I have five 10-barrel fermenters. A barrel hold has about two kegs in it, the big ones that you did keg stands on in college. And so so that's about 20 of those kegs per vessel there. And then I have a couple smaller fermenters down at the end. And once it's fermented in there, we, by adding yeast to it, we ferment the those sugars into alcohol and carbon dioxide. Then we keg it in that boxy looking guy right there with our with our keg empty keg shells. And then from there, we bring it across across the way off camera to our cold room where we store them and pump them upstairs into the tap room at the bar. So it's a can be a fairly simple process, but can also be extremely complicated depending on how in-depth you want to get. And there's many very, very talented brewers out there that don't get that deep into it and are just know by feel. And there's other brewers out there that are very scientific about it. They know all the biochemistry behind it. It's a, it can be an art form, it can be a science, and it can be both. It's actually an amazing industry.
Yeah, no, that was great, and thank you for that. Just I don't want to tear apart the questions here because I know we got to move on to other things as well. Just in terms of when people talk about brewing capacity, are they talking about the fermenting, like how much you can hold in the fermenters? Is that basically the end of the process, or what is that usually in reference to?
It can be in reference to two different things. It can be in reference to how large your boil kettle is, because you can't boil more than what's in your boil kettle at one time. Now, what you can do is double up and say run the boil kettle twice, and then put both of those into the same fermenter. So it kind of all depends on where your bottlenecks are in the production, because there's actually a couple different steps along the way that I didn't completely get into in this process, but in that explanation. But usually those bottlenecks is where it really limits what your full capacity could end up being, depending on how often you run your boil kettle, and then if you're doubling up into your fermenters or not. So we have a pretty sizable system. We have a 10-barrel system upstairs, and then we have a 3-barrel pilot system down here as well. That's 13 barrels. That's a very sizable system. Most of the breweries in this area over the last few years have been opening with much, much smaller systems and had to deal with brewing many times a day to keep up with demand. So seeing though the healthy demand in this area is what drive me to purchase these larger systems in anticipation of hopefully selling a whole lot of beer.
That's great. No, it's a good point. I'm glad you brought it up. So basically you just kind of skipped the building up stages to see what the demand was, and you went straight to a little bit of a larger capacity, right. Something that's a little bit larger than some of the others in the area that you mentioned, which will allow you to meet the even the non-COVID restriction demand in size, as well as the distribution to restaurants and some of the other places. Is that right?
Yeah, and as much as I'd like
to
say
grooving,
yeah. I mean, as much as I'd like to pat myself on the back for that, it was also out of necessity, just due to the space, and it's pretty tight and small. It's going to be extremely expensive and difficult to add additional pieces of equipment to this space. So basically, when it was move-in day, I needed to fill the space with as much equipment as I could, because, in honesty, it's going to be it's plausible, but pretty improbable that I'll be able to bring more equipment in once we're up and running. So I knew that basically everything that I bought and everything that was coming in when we were moving these pieces in, that was going to be what I was going to be having for a long time. So I needed to have that additional space for brewing.
No, I think that's great. I think it's really good to show what you have down there, because, this floor is a decent size and length, but the front window space, like the street space, you kind of look through the window, you may not be, it doesn't show how big it really is until you see what you have down there and what you have up here and the combination of all the floor space together. And I think that kind of makes sense when you add up and you see all the equipment that you just showed us. And in terms of the 5 fermenters and a couple of small ones and everything else down there. So that's great. Anything else you wanted to point out? Anything Obviously, you're probably pretty proud of all of your equipment, but mm-hmm. anything special or unique down there while you're down there before you come back up, or did we hit everything for the most part?
I'd say the only thing, and I'm not going to particularly show it because it's a tight space. Yeah. I also have a boiler down here. So one of the three things that makes this brewery, I think, unique to New Jersey is, one, that we use RO water, which is not extremely common in the state of New Jersey. There are plenty of breweries that do it, but not everybody. Two is our location. We have a downtown location. There's only a handful of breweries that I feel like have that kind of foot traffic-y downtown location. Most are in industrial parks or, you know, more destination type breweries where you're not stumbling across it. You're going there with a purpose. And then the final thing is, actually, we use steam to heat up our young beer or wort before it becomes beer. And that is great on a couple different levels. One, it's more eco-friendly because we burn natural gas. And the steam is very efficient when it comes to heating up other things. Two, with the steam, you can bring up and down the speed of the temperature during the brewing process, which can be very helpful for particular styles of beer, especially in Germany, where they do kind of these multi-step infusion type brews, which can create a lot more complexity to your tasting arc, which I'll get into a little bit when we do our tasting later in this podcast. I'll talk a little bit about how to taste a beer, and that's kind of a lot of fun. That's my favorite part of it, actually.
No, that's great. And one question I thought of, one last question while you're down there. It seems like you know a heck of a lot about brewing. You've obviously been interested in and formally into it for a couple of years now. Do you have a couple of brewers? Are you one of the brewers? Do you have like a head brewer, or how's it going to work in terms of who's doing the actual brewing?
Sure. So I have hired a head brewer. He's going to be the real artist and creator behind Bull and Bear Brewery. His name is Mike Formisano. He's been brewing for many, many years. He was actually out west in Boulder, Colorado, and in Denver, and has competed on the national scale and won many national awards, actually, with New Belgium and with a handful of other breweries as well. He's a renowned brewer. I brought him in. He's actually from Pennsylvania. And I feel like I brought in a ringer into this town. He's very talented. And a lot of the beer community knows him. And I think I really lucked out that I was able to find Mike. So he's the real talent behind the flavors that we're going to be having here at Bull and Bear Brewery. I'm kind of the assistant brewer at this point because I've not done a lot of commercial brewing. Of all of my experiences at the home level. So though I do have I'm very opinionated about what the beer tastes like. Mike is the magic that actually makes my thoughts come into reality.
Excellent. Sounds like a good pair. Thank you very much for showing us everything downstairs where the magic happens. And we'll look forward to finishing up with the tasting and hearing about your grand opening date.
Sounds great. I'll catch upstairs.
Talk to you in a minute. All right. All right, guys. Will's back up from downstairs from the brewing equipment area. And we're moving on to, for some people, the more exciting part. We're going to talk a little bit more about beer. We have a beer here Will's going to tell us about in a minute as far as what he's brewed here for today's tasting and some of the other beers that he's looking and how he's going to go about rotating what's on draft and the different styles and things like that, and also the grand opening date. But before that, just a couple of last questions, Will, for you, if you don't mind. I think people would want to know, and you touched on some of it, a lot of it in the beginning, you did a great job, but what were some of the biggest challenges that you've had? Obviously, it's been 2 years and counting, or a little bit more maybe. We've been through the pandemic. We didn't we talk about that too much in our daily lives and whatnot, but I'm sure you might have some stories. And then maybe after that, we talk about some silver lining or anything positive that came out of it. But first,
sure.
Any good stories for us? Or when you opened?
Yeah.
Building ground.
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy situation overall for the last 2 years. It's been quite surreal, even before COVID came along. So I picked this space. It used to be the Summit Food Market. It was an old dilapidated building that probably hadn't been in almost abandoned for like 7 years. You know, when I walked in, the floors were like Swiss cheese and you could put your foot through the floor, which is pretty scary considering I just told you that, you know, there's over 6,000 pounds above our heads of steel and water. And I'm like, oh yeah, I could put my foot through the floor easily. So, you know, the entire roof had to be rebuilt. Of course, the entire floor had to be underneath us, had to be reinforced and sistered, and the subflooring had to be replaced, and that took an extremely long process. The basement that I just came up from was actually a foot and a half shorter when we first came in here, so we had to rip out the entire basement, dig down about a foot and a half, and then re-pour the entire basement floor, and then put that special brewing antimicrobial flooring the breweries have on the floors, because our floors get very dirty through the brewing process. And so we had to put all that down. But during all that, we ran into an ocean of problems on a daily basis that I can't even list. It would take, you know, five podcasts just to get through them all. But some of the funny things or unique things or big setback things. One of the things was when we first came into this space, there was an old safe, big one, really big. It weighed over 2 tons. And I was excited because I was like, oh, I can refurbish that. It'll be beautiful. I can put it in my office and, you know, it'll be a nice talking point for when I'm like, you know, whenever everyone in the office, so why would you get this safe? You know, it had to be at least 100 years old. And I was really excited to have it. So, and the landlord didn't want to move it out. He's like, please keep this safe. And I'm like, yeah, I'll keep the safe. Are you kidding me? I love this thing. And so one day I come down to check on the site, and the safe has been knocked over. And there's a giant hole drilled in the bottom of it because someone thought that there was something in it. Of course, there wasn't. I knew the combination had already opened it, and it was empty, but they ruined my safe. And so...
When was that?
That was in 2000 and late 2018, early on.
Wow.
I was so upset. They ruined my safe. I had a couple other unlawful entries into this space as well. Before I had doors and everything else. So now I have security cameras and security on all the doors and motion detectors and everything up the wazoo. Because it was surprising, because, you know, you think Summit, it's a nice town, but, you know, even Summit can have a little bit of mischief that happens every now and then. So, but it was kind of a funny experience to just wish that I could have seen them, because it must have taken them hours and hours and hours of work to open the bottom of it, because they knocked it over and drilled a hole in the bottom of it. It was like, that must have taken so long to do that.
Right.
Just to knock it over, but it must have taken like an hour, and then drill a giant hole in the bottom of it, probably burnt through multiple...
Just to find nothing?
To find nothing. It's just like... Right. So that was pretty funny. That was one funny one.
Yeah.
And then... rebuilding most of the building was what really ended up taking so long. Then right when COVID hit, that's when things started getting a little bit crazy, because construction stopped entirely for a period.
As an executive order, right?
Yep. Yeah, it was an executive order. All construction was supposed to stop. Actually, all non-essential construction
right.
was to stop. And unfortunately, a previous executive order had listed that alcohol manufacturing was an essential business. So I was able to argue with the town and with the state that my construction was essential, and I was only delayed by about a week and a half as opposed to a month. So I was able to get the construction workers to come back and say, no, I am essential. Alcohol is essential to humanity. Please continue throwing hammers at the walls. And so it was...
Right, which sounds a little crazy, by the way, but I mean, liquor stores and everything were open.
Yeah, it was absurd. Yeah, it was all over the place. It was absurd.
It was in line with where alcohol was served in other locations in terms of the stores and things like that. That's what I just wanted. Just want to make that point.
It was all over the place. Time people didn't know what was going on, and it was, the liquor stores were open, and I was basically like, hey, if without me, there's nothing in the liquor stores. So, I got to be open too. And, we ran up the flagpole to see if the government would agree. And they said, yep, you're right. You are an essential construction. Because I was the only alcohol manufacturing business in the state that was under construction at the time. So, I had to kind of get a special ruling on that one. Yeah, everyone else was already done or not. So there was no one else like actively in construction at that point. So
there's a fun fact: the only under construction alcohol place in the entire state of New Jersey.
Yeah,
during that couple of weeks. Yeah,
and so it was me and hospitals were the only ones that were getting any construction done during that time. So
Anything else, is there any silver linings or you got some positive things to say before we go into our beer tasting? Anything the community or City of Summit, anyone step up to the plate?
Yeah, definitely. It was an amazing time. It was extremely difficult. There were huge setbacks, but there was the community was there to help out downtown Summit businesses. There were a few checks that came out. I'm going to try to say this next part without crying. There were a few checks that went out that really helped out a lot of the downtown area. And, it was extremely generous, and, it was really needed at the time.
So, and that was run through sorry to hit a button there. But that's a really positive thing. Give me a second. But and that went through the Summit government, right? Through the local government here.
Yeah. Summit downtown. They helped organize that. There were two different organizations that are doing it. There was a GoFundMe that was funded by just the populace of Summit and the surrounding area. And then there was an anonymous donation from another fund as well that was extremely generous, and I'm sure it saved a couple of the businesses in this town.
Wow, that's great, man! Very happy to hear that. I'm happy for you. Thank you for that, and for sharing that with everybody. It takes a lot to show.
Yeah,
it shows. On all of the different sides of something like this. And I think all of your future patrons are going to be, are going to know a lot about you before they even step foot through these doors. So that's great. Do you have a couple minutes? Should we do the tasting?
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm getting a little hot here. I'm going to take this off.
We can't leave without that.
Oh yeah. This is the best part.
I got to put the hat on that.
Oh yeah, there you go. So here we go.
Here's some. Couple minutes ago.
some shameless plugs here. Here we go. So so we're going to be doing a beer tasting, and legally we are able to remove our masks to consume beverages and alcohol and food inside the building. So we're going to do that for this portion. And we're on the opposite sides of the room, of course, as well. Now, so shameless plug. So we're going to be open for swag and for tours on Black Friday. So I'll be selling the hats that that both of us are wearing. The sweatshirt I was wearing earlier. I have some of these t-shirts as well. I don't know if the color is showing up very well. It's kind of an ice blue color. And then I also have some female gray colors as well with a nice V-neck on it. And so we have those. I have pint glasses and stickers and a bunch of other stuff. So I'll be selling all of those. But more importantly, I just wanted to kind of open up the brewery to show people around in person. If you had any further questions, because I know we kind of went through a lot of stuff quickly. We have a lot of stuff to cover within, you know, an hour period. I'm very excited to do that. Unfortunately, we will not have beer or free tastings available at that time because the beer won't be ready yet. But we are going to be opening soon after that. And that date is going to be December 4th. December 4th, we are going to be open for business and selling beer on premises, whether it's one beer or eight beers. I don't know yet. The first beer is fermenting great right now. We have a Scotch ale in the tank right now. It's very, very happy. I saw it this morning. I'm very excited about that. If you're following me on Instagram and I'm on all the social media platforms, I just posted that video. It was very, very happy, bubbling away. Very excited about that. We have some other beers lining coming up. I'm really excited to share that Scotch ale with you. And then also, though it won't be in the opening lineup, I have a Schwartz beer here, and we're going to be getting into a beer tasting. And there's the camera there. Excellent. And this is a German black beer. This is a very fascinating style. When you hear black beer, everyone sees it and goes, oh, that must be like Guinness. It must be thick and heavy and sweet. And it's no, no, and no. German black beers are very light. They are very dry. They still have a little bit of that coffee flavor in them, and they're actually usually consumed during warmer times in the weather in Germany. It's a very fascinating beer. When you're looking for that coffee flavor in a beer and you're looking for something a little bit different than your straightforward like Pilsner lager, you can drink a Schwarz beer, get that coffee, but it's like, I compare it to like drinking cold brew coffee. That's how I see it, and it tastes great.
You don't, very popular.
It's an amazing, amazing style beer that many people overlook and don't make. And I love this beer. It's a lot of fun. Right. So let's give it a shot there.
Prost. Cheers. Thank you. Thanks for letting me inside and into your second home here. It's been a blast, and wish you the best of luck. I know you're going to have it. And it's great news. December 4th, that's a Friday. Yep. So we're looking forward to it. I'll definitely be here that weekend. Don't run out of beer if I'm not here on Friday, or in line for that matter, but here. It's not like overpowering by any means. It's very smooth.
Yeah, it's very smooth, very light. It's a very interesting style. You get the I don't know if the color will come through very well on this camera, but the head on it is going to be kind of like a, not white like you get in those nitros. I'm agitated a little bit here. There you go. Yeah, so it's going to be kind of a darker. A darker head on it, not that pure white that you get with Guinness. You still get that coffee flavor in it a little bit, but it's not as it's not straightforward a coffee beer by any means. We don't put coffee in it. It's just the way that the grains are roasted themselves kind of give those the little bit of esters or not esters, not the word I'm looking for. Kind of that kind of roasted flavor that you get from the dark roasted coffees. So
very good. That was excellent. Good beer. For your first one here, and then you said you got something else going on downstairs.
Yeah.
What days do you plan on being opening? We didn't cover that. When you open, is there certain days of the week that you're going to be open, and is it going to be a weekend thing or a few days a week, or what's the schedule?
Our plan is to be open 5 days a week. Definitely Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we're considering either being open on Wednesday or Tuesday. I think at this point we're going to be open on Tuesday. And it's kind of a weird schedule. The reason why we're doing that, though, is because we need 2 days to actually make beer and kind of take over the whole space. And it gets a little bit hot and a little bit odorous as we are making many different types of beers and many different, and it can get a little intense. So we need 2 solid days of being able to just have the whole brewery to actually produce large vats of beer. And we need kind of that 1 day in between for downtime, for cleaning and resetting and milling grains and getting ready for the next round. So I think we're going to go with Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If I said that right, I'm pretty sure I did.
Tuesday and then Thursday through Sunday. You're going to take Wednesday off and Monday as well.
Correct.
Makes sense due to the brewing that needs to be done here. No, that's great. Is there anything else? It sounds like once we put this episode out, all your social media links and your website, and I know you have a blog up and running on the website and some other things. Anything you have, just obviously we'll put it out along with the episode. And we hope that everyone tunes in and gets to see what it's like to be here. And hopefully comes to join. December 4th is a Friday. So going into that long weekend. And then don't forget on Black Friday, after Thanksgiving, to come down and visit Will. Meet him for yourself. I think you'll get along with him by what you've seen here. It's a slam dunk. He's a great guy. And I think Summit's going to have a fun time getting to know you even more. And we look forward to having you here in our community for a long time to come. So good luck with everything. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And I'm going to finish the rest of this as soon as we get off here. So thank you. That's Will. I'm Ryan. Anything you want to say before we sign off?
You know, life is too short to drink bad beer. And I'll sign off with a toast. Here is to friendships. They are good fish, good ships. May they always be.
Darling, all right. Stay the bay. Thanks, Will.
Where the talk is appreciate real. Darling, stay the bay. No joke, no frills. Darling, stay the bay. It's the talk of the town. Darling, stay the bay. People all around, yeah. Garden State of Bay. Garden State of Bay. Garden State of Bay.